Hello everyone, welcome to Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends, the podcast where I speak to people much more interesting than myself. Please enjoy. Hello everyone, and welcome to this edition of Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friend. I am joined this episode by a man who I've known for about 10 years actually, probably since I started doing comedy, even though he took a bit of a holiday in the middle of it all. Ladies and gentlemen, please say hello to the king of the butt munchers, Mr. Aaron Butler.
Woo! Oh, Darren, what a beautiful day. What a day to be alive. What a time we're living in right now. Is it the best time ever? No, it's not. It's absolutely terrible. But it's great to be a guest on the podcast. Finally, we made it happen.
Yes. And also, it's pissing rain outside, but I like your enthusiasm. Thank you.
Ah, yeah. As if the world couldn't get any worse, now it's absolutely pouring it down in Ireland.
Yeah, I just want to check something as well, Woody. Although this is an audio-only podcast, I can see you. Are you, as a man who doesn't drink nor has ever drank, recording from a bar right now?
Yeah, it looks like I've sort of snuck into the, what's it called, the PD? Is that the name of the club down in West Belfast? Yeah, it looks like, or the Felons, it looks like I've snuck into a local West Belfast bar to record this with you. But we have, in our house, we just built, like a few months ago, this like outdoor cabin bar, and it's absolutely like, it's so cool to have, and it's like beautiful, but no one can come to it for like the next long time. So my dad's like just itching to get a pint with people, and they're like, well, we can't come into your house, and so it's a bit of a waste, but it's good for recording audio podcasts with you in.
Yeah. Oh, I was gonna say, because I actually tried to buy a house in West Belfast last year, and there was a bar at the back. I was like, is it a real West Belfast thing? Because people do it in the countryside, but you call it a shebeen, and it's like people are at your house at fucking 5 a.m. But in West Belfast, people are just like, eh, gotta build a bar. Fuck it.
Yeah, and like, it's funny, we built ours on our street, and now there's like 3 or 4 different houses that have seen it in our same street, and everyone is building a bar in our because we have like big back gardens here, so everyone's just good. And because bars are closed, they're like, well, flip, we'll just build our own now. So, and they've got nothing to do, they've got all this spare time, and they're like, yeah, we got government money, let's just build a bar with it.
Do you know what? I've been gardening with mine. It turns out I actually have a massive back garden, which I couldn't see when I moved in, and I've cleared everything. And now I'm thinking maybe a wee cabin bar at the back. I could probably proclaim it as a recording studio and just get steaming at the back.
Yeah. I mean, look, I obviously don't drink, so it is especially weird that I sit in a bar to do these sort of things. But if I could convince you to do it, I would just say, you know, it'll add value to your house. How about that? You know what I mean? When you go to think about the resale, Darren, that's what we got to think. You know what I'm saying? Business. That's the business mind of Aaron Butler kicking in right now.
Butler, you used to live at home with your parents. You're just waiting for them to fucking retire to Spain so you can get a house.
Yeah, the business mind. 31 still lives with his mind. Killing it. the way I see it is I'm going to inherit this thing anyway. So I may as well just, I have no brothers or sisters, so I may as well just get used to living in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think your ones fucking realized what they'd done when they had you. Like, that'll do.
Oh, yeah, completely. My mom was like, we can't bring another one of those into the world. This joke went too far. It's all good though. Listen, I get the house, I get the bar, I get a lot of great things whenever the parents ditch me.
Exactly. And are we gonna have a comedy night in the bar whenever that all goes down? Can we start running a venue?
Could you imagine we did a gig in here? The it's probably twice the size of McCooey's in Newry. So I'm sure you could, yeah.
If anybody is familiar with Butler's work, especially being connected with McCooey's in Newry, down where I run one of the comedy clubs, yeah, you will have seen is it a viral video of you?
I think it's probably viral for Newry, yeah.
Yeah.
for those guys. But yeah, basically I did the Newry McCooey's gig, which is a lovely gig, by the way, ran by yourself and Leanne. And when I did it the last time, I fell off. Well, I say fell off the stage. The stage sort of broke apart on me a little bit, let's be honest. But you weren't there, sure you weren't?
Nope, I wasn't there. I got a text message saying, holy fuck, Aaron Butler's just fallen off the stage. And I was like, he's from West Belfast. He's going to claim we're fucking done. That's us.
Oh, yeah. No. I'm not that. But, well, I mean, I would try. Well, I mean, I wasn't going to claim until coronavirus happened, and then I was like, maybe I should, just to get a few, just to get away emergency support fund going on, like, because we don't know. But yeah, I flipping fell off the stage, and at the time, it was so, it was almost surreal. It was almost like time stopped, or it slowed down, or like I was having like an outer body experience, because it was like it happened so suddenly, where I was going, did I just fall off stage? Like, or am I still standing at the mic stand? And then like, I remember the silence in the room was just so, like, it was just insane. And then I just started telling jokes again, and it was like nothing happened. And yeah, it was just crazy.
One of my favorite things about that video is you getting it back. Like, that's, I was, like, as somebody who does a lot of MCing, I was very impressed that you brought that back from here. Yeah, remember that time when you broke my fucking neck?
Oh, well, the thing was, if I would have been just doing like an open spot or support or something, I probably would have just wrapped it up and been like, let's just call it. That's a good sign to just call it out. Then because I was headlined, I was like, I can't leave just falling off stage and then running away. Like, so I was like, right, I'll sort of, it was almost like a survival instinct where it's like, right, I got to bring this back no matter what. There's no like choice of ditching out of this. So yeah, it was certain. And that's why I put it online, because like, I didn't want people to think like, oh, if something embarrassing happens to you, like you just sort of shy away from it or run away from it. It's like, no, just sort of go for it head on and laugh with yourself and make a fool of yourself, and just everyone will enjoy it as well, you know?
I think at that point, if you're anyway self-conscious, maybe comedy's not the best fucking job to be trying.
Yeah, yeah, completely.
Like the stories we tell and the things we say about ourselves, if somebody says something back to you and you're just like, that wasn't very nice, probably comedy's not the spot for you.
Yeah, you got to have thick skin. You got to be honest with yourself, and you got to be able to take, you know, the good criticism and the bad criticism and just roll with it. You know, that's what I think is just what it's all about, really.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think one of the good things about what you do as well is because I would describe myself very much as a club comic. You also produce sketches, you make videos, you've fucking dancing bits. You've done acting, dancing. You're in the theater, darling. You're in the theater, and you also do comedy. So will you just do anything not to have a proper job? Is that what's going on? Oh, you froze.
Corporate video production business.
Go back there, because you skipped there. I lost you.
Oh, I had a wee unstable connection. Am I good now?
You're good now, but you said something about what you do whenever you're not thing, which was a corporate video production, was it?
Yeah. So like, I have my own corporate video production business, which I've ran for like 6 years now, and it's been really, really great. And then the corona, and what would happen was I would obviously be so busy working and being involved in that it would be hard for me to find time to record like sketch comedy or write some stand-up or do some sort of dance and musical thing. And so it's almost like I was thinking like last year, like in recent years, being like, Flip, I would love just a big chunk of time just to be able to sit in the house and do my own thing. And then I got handed that bit of time in the form of the coronavirus. And now you're sort of, it's almost like you don't know what to do with it or how to treat it. And then this week, I think, has been really difficult because of all the protesting and all people's emotions being so high that you're sitting in the house thinking, right, well, let's be creative and be funny and write something funny. And then you almost are like, what are you meant to do in these times? Like, what do people want to hear? Or like, are people wanting to hear something funny or something? I know they are, because the world is very serious about it, but at the same time, you almost feel like it's not the time or place right now to sort of flex that muscle a little bit, if that makes sense.
I have the thing where I was sort of wondering about, number one, I'm shit scared of putting anything online at the minute, because I am a white male in my 30s. I pretty much, my people rule the world, you know, that kind of thing. I was just like, oh, fuck me. So you've got to be careful. And then also the sort of thing where I have to, like, if there's a thought of a joke or something, I nearly have to like text it to a friend, because I'm afraid of going. Because normally when we get an idea in our head, sometimes we'll put it out into the ether, put it on Twitter, put it on Facebook. And then if you get a bit of a reaction to it, you go, right, that might be a bit, I'll take that off and write about it. But yeah, as you said, everybody's very fucking serious, and it might be a while before we get back to just kind of chilling out and relaxing and, you know, shooting some people outside of school. But
yeah, Fresh Prince style. It's more just when I sit down to write every day, I'm sitting down to a piece of paper and I'm going, I don't know. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, and the thing is, it's like, right, the coronavirus thing has been done to death. Like, no one, like, I don't want to hear anything about it, so why would I write something that people want to hear about it? You know what I mean? And then you look at all this other bad stuff that's happening with politics and Donald Trump and flipping Prince Andrew, Jeffrey Epstein, Black Lives Matter, all this sort of stuff. And you're like it's almost too chaotic and too much pandemonium. And it's like, if I do step out there to make a joke about something or to do, like, am I crossing a line? Is this what people are? It's just, it's very hard to gauge at the minute. And it's almost like, it's such a strange time we're living in. But look, this is the challenge you're supposed to take as a creative person. You just sort of got to roll with it at this time.
Well, the other thing as well I wanted to say is, I mean, you've seen my stand-up. Majority of my stories are about stuff that's happened to me. So I have to be able to go places and do things to be able to write. I lack the imagination to invent a scenario. Something has, even if my stories aren't exactly what happened to me, there's some basis on them. So the only thing I'm going to be writing jokes about is the fact that I fucking bought a mountain bike. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, writing stand-up material, I think I've wrote about two bits and I'm happy with them. But at the same time, it's like, when you were out doing things, you probably would have wrote way more than that, you know. But it's just, if you're not having experiences and you're not out doing things and meeting people and talking to people and meeting different characters, it's like, well, what do I do? Just talk about sitting in the house with my mom and dad all day, or, you know, meeting my friend for an isolated coffee at a flipping, you know, drive through somewhere. It's just like, it's just not the same. So it'll, but the one thing I'm very, I'm so excited for whenever stand-up does return, because I feel like a lot of my material that I was doing before will just carry over. And I think that the writing's strong enough that, you know, I'll not really miss out on too much. And I think some of the new bits that I'll do will help that as well. And I don't want to sort of, like, I haven't wrote anything about coronavirus. I haven't wrote anything about the pandemic. And I don't really know if I'll be one of those comedians that'll address it.
I was thinking about this. I mean, probably if it comes up when I'm MCing, if I'm talking to somebody, because obviously when you're MCing, you'd be like, so what are you up to? That's all they're going to talk about. So I can reference it there. But as for writing new stuff about it, I have no interest in doing it. And also, I would fucking hate to go to the Edinburgh Festival next year and see 500 shows of posters, you know, me and my pandemic are in it. All that. Oh, fuck off. I don't want to see that.
Yeah, you can see all the puns. You can just see a poster of, like, guys holding a bottle of Corona and pointing at it, being like, hey, do you want to hear about this? You know what I mean? I actually forgot about the Fringe. It's crazy. I think that's not even happening this year.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I was going to say, I was wondering, would the city of Edinburgh lose a lot of money over it, because there's a lot of trade, but a lot of the money kind of doesn't stay in Edinburgh anyway. That's one of the main complaints of the people. But that leads me into the other, well, two of the things that I want to talk about for you yourself. You pretty much started out, when you started stand-up, one of your first gigs was the fucking Gilded Balloon at the Edinburgh Festival.
Yeah, I think I talk about this to people sometimes. I've had such a strange, I would say maybe unique road to stand up than maybe anyone else has. Like, one of the first times I did stand up, in fact, the first time I did stand up was for a TV show for BBC. And it's like, you know, you go from that, and then a few weeks later, you're doing the open mic in the Pav, and you're thinking, whoa, what wrong road turn did I take here to end up from the Gilded Balloon to the Pav? And then you go back and you do, like, the Ulster Hall with a production company, and then you go again and do some other gig in the middle of Lurgan somewhere, and then I take, like, 7 years off comedy, and then I come back again. And it's just, like, this absolute, it is a complete roller coaster of ups and downs. But I think at the minute I've landed in a really good place where I've got a good consistent sort of set coming along. And I was, before all this kicked off, I was building towards, like, putting on my own solo show and things like that. But obviously that's all put on the break at the minute, you know?
Well, it's just delayed. It's not happening. This year I wanted to do a retread of last year's show, which I only really did once or twice. So the year before, I did a show called Whiskey and Ginger Meal, and then I kind of went on tour, so I went traveling, but I was doing that show everywhere I went, which was great to just keep doing it. Last year, I just did a show which was about, I did a charity boxing match, and the show was pretty much like a mental health kind of thing called Fighting Fit. I just did it once, and I was like, I'll do that again next year. I'll get the recording of it, I'll go back, I'll jiggle bits, and then I'll move into next year with it. And so then, as you said, the same thing was, I was busy trying to get my two clubs up and running, and then out the window with that. Like, I was going to do it in, I think I was going to do it in June or July, because I was doing a tour support for Farmer Michael. We were supposed to be in the Waterfront in May, and then I was like, once I do that and there's a couple of hundred people that have seen you, then I go, I'm doing my own show that's going to hold fucking 100 people, come to that. But sure, that's all delayed. I don't know when to do it, and how much of an accordion are we going to be? Are we going to be squished in trying to do everything at once, or are we going to fucking draw it out and see how many shows we can do?
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how things just sort of get back to normality, if they do anytime soon. I mean, we don't really have a timeline on what really is going to happen and when, but I will say I'll be very excited whenever the likes of the first Laveries comes back and the first, you know, run of gigs from other places like the one you do in Newry and the Sunflower Bar and a bunch of other things, just to even see how the audience are different and see how the comedians, you know what I mean? It'll be one of the most unique experiences I think you'll have in your lifetime of stand-up coming back to the bars and clubs.
Well, I think from that as well, yeah, you're saying it's going to be great going back, because how good can we all be after fucking 4 months off?
Well, I mean, I took 7 years off and didn't do too badly, so you might be all right. Truthfully, though, I am used to taking such a long break from stand-up that I genuinely think I'll be at a bit of an advantage coming back, because I also think just the way my material's written, it's written in a way that, you know, the structure of it sort of, there's always going to be that punchline and laughter. It's not really, I don't know what my style is, and this is one of the complex things. Like, I'm a kind of a storyteller, but I'm also like a bit of an old school just joke writer in terms of, like, you know, metaphors and comparisons and puns and rules of three and all these different little tools and techniques mixed in with some just real life experiences that I have. So I think I'm really looking forward to it. I'm excited for it. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if it's a flipping year from now. I don't know whenever, but I'm totally ready to get back to it. Like,
one of the things as well is you are, I mean, personally speaking, you're the first person I know who went into like a self-isolation, because I was chatting to you in work. Mm. I was still working at the time, and you were like, man, I'm going to go lock myself in the house. And I was like, well, it's not that bad, is it? Literally a week later, 1 week after you'd said that to me, my boss came down and was like, put a pair of gloves on you, wear a mask. All food has to be put into takeaway containers. I was like, can they still sit here? He was like, yeah, but we're not giving them out plates because we have to wash them. And I was just like, what is happening? That happened to me. And like, I got told that like 11 o'clock on a Tuesday morning and finished my shift and was like, I'm not coming back. Fuck that.
Yeah. And it's, do you know what? I think it was just, it's such a strange thing, because I think no one knew, and no one really still does know the extent of what the virus is. And they don't know, they can't pinpoint, you know, there's reports coming out today that asymptomatic people aren't actually spreading it. But then beforehand, they were saying that asymptomatic people were spreading it. The WHO were saying you don't need to wear face masks. Now they're saying do wear face masks. So it's like, I think there's still a lot that scientists are learning and figuring out about this virus. Never mind your local food restaurant place, you know what I mean? So I think when it boils down to it, the likes of us and the likes of local businesses, all we're trying to do is survive and do the best that we can and figure things out like everyone else is with the advice we're given at the time. And all we can do at this point is be patient and wait. For all we know, like in 2 months' time, the virus could fall off the face of the earth and everything is just, I mean, things are already sort of opening up a wee bit more quicker than I expected them to. Like, for example, the shops and things opening, and I love seeing it, but you do also just have that small bit of concern of, will this cause the second spike that they keep hanging over our heads?
Yeah, are we gonna fall on Spanish flu and get hit with a second one that's fucking worse than the first one? So, yeah. That's what they say. It's very much made up. But I mean, you know what? I'm glad we're talking about it on the podcast, because once we get back to gigging, if we're in a green room and anybody mentions it, I'll fucking put them through a wall.
Yeah, all big time. But yeah, it is what it is. And all we're doing is just getting on with it, you know?
Yeah, true. Well, we'll get off the depression talking and go on and talk about something I actually saw you put up today. And so maybe about 2 weeks ago, when did you originally put out your GA video?
Yeah, 2 weeks ago, I put on like a little GAA video, and
someone who's played Gaelic football all my life, I really, number one, resonated with me. Number two, I had a good chuckle at it. And number three, I shared that thing into fucking football groups from teams all around the world, and then you deleted the fucking thing.
Man, here's the thing. I didn't want to delete it. I was forced to delete it by the good.
Are you allowed to talk about this before I don't want to get you in further trouble?
Oh no, I don't give a fuck. Like, yeah, I'll spill the beans. Hey, come get me. What are you going to get off me? 3 Power Ranger helmets if you flip and sue me. You know what I mean? The what do you want? This jacket? Sure thing. The like, there's not exactly any assets the GAA can sue me for. So yeah, 2 weeks ago I put on this GAA video, and it's complete satire. It's just a bit of a laugh. Nothing serious. The GAA see it, contact me. Hey, we see you're using our logo in your video. Please take it down or we're going to take further action. So then I was forced to take the video down. I had to change the logo and put the video back up. Now, the ironic thing is the logo I changed it to is barely any different from the actual GAA logo because it's a font. So it's almost just them and flexing their muscle a little bit. And maybe it's just, I don't know what their deal is or whatever. I don't know if they're just having nothing else better to do during lockdown because no GAA is happening. But the communications department, for some reason, is all over a little Belfast boys video shot in his back garden that has about 400 hits just because he put their logo in it. Flipping, get a life.
See, if I was you, I would have said, right, lads, I'll take it down, but first of all, you have to rebuild Casement Park. You give me a quality stadium in fucking Belfast, and I will take down my logo. So yeah, that's fucking madness, man. I thought it was something. I mean, in the GAA, as somebody who plays, we've always had a joke that there's like a northern bias, like they don't like us.
Yeah, if anything confirms it, that's it. I played Gaelic when I was in primary school. I was the goalkeeper for our team in St. Kevin's Primary School, and I was woeful, but I play it. Like,
yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. When in the video, you can actually bounce and solo a ball, so that was one of the things. Like,
that was, by the way, total fluke. I did that in the first try and could never do it again. I think I tried to retake it like 4 times in the ball. It was a blowaway ball. It just kept going everywhere.
Oh yeah, because you didn't have you, obviously if you play Gaelic football, you know that the ball weighs 4 stone. So
yeah, it really does. I was going to order in like one of those O'Neill's balls, and it was going to take like 3 weeks to come. And I was like, nah, I'll just buy this blowaway ball from the shop that's up at the top of my street. So either way, look, I enjoyed it. People seemed to like it. It was a bit of a laugh, bit of a piss take, and the GAA obviously have no banter in them. So there you go.
And that was the only, because I mean, I've seen joke videos about the GAA for years, but you use the logo and shit the bed.
Do you know what I think it is? I don't even think it was the logo. I think they seen it as a bit disrespectful to the sport, and they were like, oh, well, we're going to show this little dickhead and we're just going to ask him to take it down because of the logo. It's just fair enough. Like, but it was only like, I don't know. I don't know, Darn.
That has annoyed me that somebody in Crow Park has nothing to be fucking better about than sitting on their laptop going, did you see this video of this young fella?
Yeah.
I have to say though, your Kerry top was lovely. Who did you get that off?
Here's a story about that top. So I have never owned a Gaelic top before, but I wanted to own one. So last year I took myself down to the O'Neill store down at Sainsbury's. Shout out to those guys, not a sponsor. And I went down to those guys and I was like, I'm not going to buy a top based on what county or whatever it is. I'll buy it based on how good does it look. So I seen the top. It was black and gold, which is, you know, something I would be quite keen on wearing. And I bought it, and I didn't even check the label to see like who it was or what it was. And I bought it and showed it to my friend who plays Gaelic. And I was like, what do you think of this top? And he was like, who the fuck is that? And I was like, I don't know. Check the label. He checked the label. It was the Kerry Alternative Keeper top, which is like the most niche. Oh, the most niche Gaelic top. Yeah, not even the alternative player top. Not even the keeper top. It's the alternative keeper top. So basically no one has it.
That is only worn at away games. Let me see. Hang on. It's only worn at away games if they're playing another team that wears green.
In black and gold. Oh, that wears green.
No, in green. So, because I mean, Kerry are playing in green and,
oh, yeah,
green and yellow. So unless they're playing like Limerick, Donegal. So like at best, at most, that's worn once a year, and you fucking went and bought it from the O'Neill store.
I was their only seal that year. That popped up in the system, and they went, "Fuck!" And boys, hold on, came through like NASA. They were like, "Whoa, we got a seal." They were celebrating, people popping champagne bottles. Woo!
It is a nice one. It actually looks like an old Manchester United top that was like years ago, where it was two jerseys. You could turn it inside out, and it was another top. It was like,
yes,
was
I have one. I have that top, and it still fits.
Yeah,
I still wear it.
Of course it does. You haven't put on weight since fucking 2001.
It's very true. I hit puberty, and then this was just me for, I'm like Benji Buttons.
Just the body of a fucking preteen.
Oh dear. Okay, if you can't laugh.
Well, I mean, look, it's probably all the dancing you do that keeps you trim, so you're all right. I can't be laughing. Maybe I should be at the back doing a fucking tango, you know what I mean? Might sort me out.
I've been doing daily walks at the minute. Haven't been doing too much intense exercise. I was doing some boxing, so it was like a few weeks sort of out the back, just with a bag out here, and that was cool and things like that. But I always like to sweat. I never like to, when it comes to exercise, I hate doing the same thing for like a number of weeks. Like I have to just sweat, whether it's like a sport like tennis or something, or it's dancing, or it's lifting weights, or just whatever. I always have to switch it up because I get so bored after a while.
Do you find yourself, I mean, when you do musicals and you do plays where there's like dance routines and stuff, once the show's over, are you sort of mentally done with that? You're like, I've been fucking doing this for 3 months. I don't want to do this dance anymore. Is that?
Do you know what? Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. Like you spend so much time because you do what's called like you do reps. So like you do your rehearsal where you're constantly like, or sorry, it's called drilling. So you'll constantly drill the dance. So you're drilling the routine and you'll do that. Like you'll go to your rehearsal and you'll maybe do the same dance like 10, 15, 20 times. And the song will be playing in your head and you'll do that like 4 days a week. And you'll just be like, oh my God, I can't wait for this to be over. And you have like great fun doing it on stage. But like after it's over, you're just like, I don't want to dance for a long time.
Yeah, I just remember, because I was chatting to you earlier on about one of the shows we were going to talk about. I remember when we were drilling for a show we did in school years ago, and we had the dance, and the fucking, whatever was going wrong, the tape player wasn't working, and the band weren't there to help us rehearse. So we did it about 10 to 15 times. The dance teacher just clapped the timing, and we did
it. Oh, yeah.
So we weren't even listening to the song to like get into a groove of it. It was just like, she was just, okay, oh, yeah. Ready, six. Seven, go. And I was like, oh my fuck. And you're just doing the movements, but also wishing you were dead at the same time, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and your brain and your fitness levels are trying. That's the one thing actually I love about dance, is that people don't realize that like it's not just like a fitness thing, like physically, but in your brain, it's like a mental thing, because you're thinking, oh my God, what's the next 5 steps while I'm still doing this step? And I'm also trying to catch my breath. It is actually it's quite the dynamic going on between your head and your movement to your body, but that's what makes it sort of fun. And that's when you're saying like about the clapping thing, that's what's called like counts of eight. So like in dancing, you've got like a count of eight, and that's where a little bit of dance fits into. And that's how you structure the dance to the song. So you'll learn the dance without the song, and then you'll put it in the counts of eight, and in the counts of eight transfer into the song. It's all very technical, Darren.
Yeah, no, I always thought it was funny as well, because even when I knew you years ago, you were always doing that stuff, and we used to play five-a-side together, and we'd always have a great giggle about, you know, a fucking butler and his dance classes. And then one day I was just like, for that man's hobby, all he does is hang about with beautiful women who are in great shape. He might be onto something here.
Yeah. Oh darn. Like that's the thing. I mean, say what you want about me, but I was ahead of the curve on that one. Because I'll tell you where it started too. I remember going to Queens, and I was sort of, I didn't know really how to meet people, and I was sort of like, you know, there was, I did like a computer course or a creative multimedia course, so there wasn't really any girls in my class and stuff. It was like just all guys who were very introverted and shy, and I was like, oh, how am I going to get a social life or a dating life here? So I seen the Queens had their first ever dance team that year, and they were looking for guys, and I was the only guy to join the dance team. So it was me rehearsing with like 20 beautiful dancing girls like every day at the flipping students union, and it was a great time. And then from there, I went and started doing like musicals and shows in Northern Ireland, like for different companies and stuff like that. But the beautiful, like, it is good to be a single guy in those shows, because like the majority of fellas that do musicals or dance are, you know, gay guys, and other guys that have like maybe girlfriends or stuff like that. So it was a good way for me to meet people and socialize and just make some connections and network.
No, one of the things that I always say to people that's very important in life is to have, even if you are a heterosexual male, one of the important things to do, if you want to be good with women, have female friends. This is something I recommend to people. I have lots of female friends, and it's brilliant because when you are a single gent, you've got like a, it's like a council of elders you can ask questions to.
Yeah, there was that. And like, I was on the Queen's dance team, but I never even dated a single one of those girls, which does make me sound like a loser. But here's what those girls did do for me. They were able to communicate with me, and I was able to learn from them. And I was able to sort of hear what their experiences were dating guys and vice versa. And then I would maybe be at a house party of one of them. I'd get invited to house parties. They would maybe introduce me to one of their girlfriends that they knew that wasn't a part of the team. Things like that. So I think just having, you're right, having social connections in general, you know, always leads to something good, I think.
Yeah, I think it was that kind of, even if it boils down to the simplistic thing of you might be texting a girl, like I used to live in a house, you were actually over in my house when I lived in Malone Avenue in Belfast. I lived with four girls. And it was brilliant because it was the best sounding board ever, because I would be maybe texting a girl and I would just go, should I say this? And they would all go, no, no, you fucking idiot. Don't say it. And I was like, okay, delete that text.
Yeah. But isn't it funny how like you lived with four girls? I obviously have always, because of being in shows and stuff, have always known a large amount of women, and people always just assume, they're like, you're bucking them ones, aren't you? Like, I bet you everyone thought you were, you know what I mean? And you're like, and people can't get their head around it. And you're like, no, they're just my friend. They're like, it weighs up, sure. And they try and make fun of you for like, you're not even bucking them. I don't know why I'm going to Paddy McDonald's voice here, but the I feel like it's just the one that's in my head right now. Look, we're living in a new day these days.
No, look, I think it's very important, and I always have, even when I was, you know, because I mean, I come from a house of all boys as well. So obviously, the predominant female voice in my life is my mum, you know, kind of way. It's good to have that. But I went to a mixed school as well, which meant I was capable of communicating with women anyway, because girls were just in my life every day. It wasn't like in first year I went to a grammar school, which was all boys, which was dead on when I was 11, and then hit puberty at 12. I was like, I'm out of here, fuck this. I moved school.
I went to the all boys Christian Brothers secondary school, and I never was in school with girls. And to be honest, there was part of you that were like, I'll be class if girls were here, because we'd be able to talk to girls and stuff. Then I think there's also that little sort of, because you're a guy and you're around all the lads, you're like, here, this is great crack that it's just all the boys here, and we can, you know what I mean, we can make fart jokes, and we can just punch each other, and we can, you know what I mean, we could be crude around each other, and we could just get away with things that we wouldn't get away with if we had to be, you know, nice around girls.
Yeah, well, one of the things that leads into as well, back to the musicals, one of the things about St. Colman's College in Newry, which was the grammar school I went to in first year, they did school musicals, right?
All boys?
All boys. This is where it gets sinister.
What show did they do?
The one I saw, the one that was on the year I was in school, which I went to audition for until I found out the what was going to happen, was Oklahoma.
Oh, so let me just guess this. Did they cast the girls as guys and they did it in drag?
They cast the sixth and seventh year boys played the male parts, and first, second, and third year younger boys played the female parts, and then they dressed you in drag. How fucking sinister was the Catholic Church?
Oh my God, that's crazy. I can't believe, but here's the thing, like, I was going to say I can't believe that sort of stuff happened, but I can believe it, because like, back in the day, no one blinked at that this sort of thing. Like, I tell this story as well, like, I know, I don't want to get in trouble here for the whole flipping Black Lives Matter stuff that's happening at the minute, but when I was 11 years old, so that's 20 years ago now. 20 years ago, my school had a Stars in Your Eyes contest, and I was picked to be Craig David in that contest. Now, darn, I don't need to spell this out for you, but I don't exactly look like R&B Garrett sensation Craig David. So my school, now keep in mind, I'm 11, so I don't know any better. Like, I'm just a kid, and they're like, right, the teachers are all looking at me going, how can we make this little white boy who has straight brown hair look like R&B sensation Craig David? And the politics teacher, Mr. Lawrence, put his hand up and went, I'll sort it out, don't worry. And no one knew what that meant at the time until the night of the performance. And they went, right, I need to go to makeup and see Mr. Lawrence. Why politics teacher Mr. Lawrence was doing makeup for the Stars in Your Eyes show, no one knows, because he was a fella who was married, 34, with two kids that never did makeup before. So I sat in the makeup chair, and he had beside him a photo of Craig David, and I was there, and he looked at the photo. Then looked at me and had a very awkward look on his face, looked at the photo again, put it down, and lifted out of his bag a bottle of brown Crayola paint, and then continued to just paint that on my face, put a gold chain on me, and looked at me and was like, that's him sorted. And I went on stage that night just in this brown paint. Now, the worst thing about it was I came dead last in the competition out of 12 boys. And the reason I knew that was because the competition ran all, it, like we were meant to, it was too, the amount of time, like it was supposed to go on longer, but they finished it early. So to stretch out time, they decided to announce who came last to first. So all 20 years, and instead of doing the top three, they went, okay, we'll talk about who in the votes who came last. I'm 11 years old, dressed in black paint with a gold chain around my neck, not knowing what's going on. I've just sang Walking Away by Craig David. Again, very, big very tune, confusing.
Big tune.
Yeah, big tune, for a very serious tune for the Stars in Your Eyes contest. They tell me that I came last, and I start crying, and the brown paint just starts flipping, going down my face, down my neck. It's just a complete disaster. Like,
anybody who tells you racism doesn't exist in Ireland is a fucking idiot.
But here's the thing, like, not one teacher, like about four or five different teachers looked at me before I went out on stage, and not one of them went, this is a bit close to the bone, do you think we should let him go out like this? They all looked at me and went, looking good, Arne. And I was like, yep,
yeah, thanks everybody, that's just gonna head out here. And what the fuck? No, one of the things we did, because, I mean, you're like me, I went to Catholic school. Now, one of the mad shit things was whenever I went to St. Paul's High School in Bessbrook, we had boys and girls, so we could do a show. We did a thing, it was for the millennium, so the year 2000, so 20 years ago, like yourself, we performed Grease.
Mm.
Now, one of the things, well, two of the things about that show. Number one, Grease is actually quite, the musical, now, the movie's raunchy enough. The musical is quite raunchy. It's very rock and roll. It's very of its time.
Mm-hmm.
So we, number one, they had to edit our script.
Yeah, I think when they do, they have a version called Grease Junior, I think, which basically takes all the sexual references out, which is shit.
No, we didn't have that. We had a teacher with a marker going, one of the things was that this show ran, I think it was five nights. So we had open night. The second night was special guests only. Now, special guests only is the Board of Governors and the local clergy.
Wow.
So they're coming along to see the rock and roll musical Grease about people bucking in cars. And there was a whole part, there's a joke in it where everyone's hanging out, and there's a joke about something about balloons, but it's a reference to condoms.
Yes.
X'd out of it. Forget about that. You're not saying that in front of the bishop. And I was like, this is, looking back, this is fucking madness. One of the things was we also had to do, because it was a big advert for the school and we sold it all the nights, then they put on a daytime matinee for all the local primary schools to come and check out. So you could be like, look how good this school is, look what they do. So we performed Grease to a load of 11-year-olds, P7s, who were going to be picking their school after the thing. It was fucking madness, just looking back. And same as you, I got stuck in the makeup chair. Now, you've known me for quite a few years, Arne. You know my eyebrows are a different color to my hair. My eyebrows are blonde.
I mean, they're just not there in my eyes. Imagined. Yeah, yeah. When I think of you, I don't think eyebrows.
Exactly. Now, what that meant was one of the teachers was like, Darren, you're very pale. The lights are quite bright. We're going to have to darken you. So, and I was like, darken me? Whoa, so what are you, fucking rancid? Calm down. So they got the stage makeup, which is like oil. Just put that on me, the sponge. It was thick on my skin. And then my teacher, who I can still remember, I mean, since we're naming people, Mrs. Rafferty, who was my science and my religion teacher. What's going on there? She was like, I'm going to colour in your eyebrows. Now, what she did was, she didn't colour in the eyebrows I have. She did my eyebrows like she was doing her own. So they were fucking gorgeous.
No.
Like, they were,
You should get her back just to do them now.
It wasn't like she's like squiggled them in and be like, right, that's what your eyebrows look like. She just went.
they were glamorous. They were proper. It looked like Fashion Week in your production of this.
And then they obviously the lipstick and stuff, and we went out and did it. And of course, even though we had boys and girls and we had enough people to do the show, I played the part of Roger, who's one of the T-Birds, and I ended up singing.
Yes, he sings Mooning.
I sang Mooning, and of course then you're just like, this is quite a sweet ballad, a romantic song. The girl I was singing it to, because obviously we're from a fucking village in South Armagh, was my second cousin.
Oh, well, that just makes all the sense in the world now, doesn't it? I mean, what is a nerdy production of Grease if you're not singing? I'm surprised Sandy and Danny just weren't brother and sister.
No, because one was blonde and the other one was darker.
Ah, okay, yeah, fair enough. The third cousins. That's too funny. Like,
it was awkward. It was funny, yet tragic, yet terrifying. It was all wrapped into one. Like, it was, and me, myself, and two of my good mates ended up being the T-Birds as well. My buddy James McGinn played Danny Zuko, and another friend of mine, John Trainer, played Sonny. And we actually had a great time doing it. But then then we had the weird thing, which, going back to the GAA, a guy who was trying to be the GAA president this year but didn't get elected is a guy called Jarlath Burns. He's now the principal of St. Paul's, my old high school. He played the part of the Teen Angel.
Yes.
So if you've ever seen the show, what's Teen Angel? Beauty School Dropout is the song he sings. Uh-huh. But it was really, it got kind of sinister as well, because all of the girls, like, so we had like the school dance team, the girls were the chorus dancers. So whenever they were doing Beauty School Dropout, this guy in his 40s is dressed up in the white tux and giving it all, and everyone's cheering because, hey, he's the teacher, woo-hoo. And all the girls were wearing these like negligees, but it's just a load of 15-year-old girls. I was like, this is a bit weird.
Yeah, that's a very strange part of the show, because it can get, especially if you cast, like, for example, especially in today's day and age with the flipping Me Too movement and all that stuff, like, I'm in my production of it as well, we had like a guy who I think was in his 50s, and the girl who was playing Frenchie, who he sings the song to, was like 18, and like, it just came across a wee bit just strange, you know what I mean? And here's the worst thing about the production I did. The Teen Angel wasn't dressed in a suit. He was dressed in just a nappy.
Like a Cupid? Is that what they were going for?
Yeah, like a Cupid.
But just a...
So imagine a 50-year-old guy in a nappy singing to an 18-year-old girl. Isn't that crazy?
Don't you ever mock my small town Armagh fucking production ever again.
And here, that was the Opera House. That was the Grand Opera House in Belfast.
Is that where you did that?
Yeah. And the worst thing was as well, the director made, so for that number, there has to be a bunch of dancers and stuff too. He put the guys in the number, and all the guys who were T-Birds had to wear nappies as well. So I had to be on stage in a freaking nappy during Beauty School Dropout dancing. And I loved it, to be honest.
I know, but...
I was in the back. I was the one who suggested it. I was like, we should wear nappies. And he was like, what? Everyone was like, shut up. I was like, no, I didn't say it. It wasn't me.
Because, I mean, with shows like that, any scene you're not in, you're out the back getting ready for something, or you're fucking changing. But you're like, let's have a costume change, and then we'll probably be back on stage in the next scene.
I swear to God, that's what it was. I had to go from nappy and I was in the next scene. So all my caution beside stage, the keyboard's playing the wee interlude. And I'm like, just, oh my God, it was crazy. That's the fun of it, isn't it?
Yeah, that's one of the great mysteries and the great things about like theatre production. Whenever you go see like a West End musical, the ones that really, like, they nearly fool you when you see some of the stuff and you go, oh my God, that's amazing. And then what you don't see is you side stage or me side stage crookedly buttoning up a fucking waistcoat or something, be like, I need this on for the high school prom dance number.
Yeah. It's such a, those shows are such well-oiled machines, though. It's actually almost a marvel when you see like all the behind the scenes and stuff. Like, if they have like a quick costume change, they have people hired that'll be side stage, and you'll just stand there like just still like a statue, and they will strip you and put your costume on in about 10 seconds. It's incredible.
Yeah. Do you have a preference of whether you like to do stand-up more or theatre? What do you prefer?
It's so weird because they're both so different. Like, I guess at the minute I prefer doing stand-up, but like when they're two different feelings. Stand-up is more self-satisfying because you've worked so hard and you've been the one, and it's been you on stage alone. Whilst doing like a big sort of show that's like a theater show with a cast and things like that, it's like there's like a camaraderie, there's a group feeling, there's a different energy. I think musicals are a million times easier than doing stand-up. I think anything is a million times easier doing stand-up. So there's almost like, I have such a fun feeling when I'm doing a show like that, because I don't feel any stress or pressure. All I gotta do is memorize the lines and memorize the dances and just smile and have fun with it and sing a good song. But with stand-up, it's like, right, I gotta, you know, there's an audience out here paying for me tonight. They've probably got a babysitter. There's pressure on this. People have invested in this. People want to laugh. Like, there's a lot of good acts on the night, and I gotta follow them. Is my material, did I work hard enough on it? Did I write some good enough jokes? Like, there's such a, stand-up just has so much more elements into it that makes it just that much more exciting, nerve-wracking, and just, it's a complete unique beast on its own. But if I was to say I had a favorite, it probably is stand-up. But don't get me wrong, musicals are just so musicals are way more fun because there's no pressure.
One of the last gigs I did with you was, which was actually having you down doing the Sunflower, which is the club I run, but was it Christmas time we did the Limelight? What was that one for, when I went on?
Yeah, the Christmas, the comedian's Christmas gig.
See it nights like that, because we know so many good comedians. One of my greatest fears is whenever I'm a bit more relaxed, obviously, when I'm emceeing, because I'm like, right, I'm controlling this. This is my show. But when we do those shows, we just walk up and walk up and walk up and just bring on the next guy or the next girl, and you know what's coming. One of my greatest fears of going on stage is I don't want to be the person that dies, because by law of numbers, sometimes their nights are like that night we did was a killer night. Everybody flew, but there's nothing as fucking scary as like you're just standing stage going, don't let it be me. Don't let me be the one go back into the green room and everybody taking the piss because I've just went in my face. You know what I mean?
Yeah, those nights are like when you're on with everyone else, like we're all good friends and stuff, but there is obviously just an element of, oh God, don't let me die in front of all my friends and all the other comedians and this entire big audience that's came out. I was lucky in the fact that I had probably one of the strongest nights I've ever had that night. And it was flipping, I had a ball at that one. I owe it all to the introduction you gave me, of course.
The 10 minutes when I just went straight out to a cold room and went, shut up, here we go.
Man, fair play, because I genuinely do, like, I get really worked up and nervous about especially those gigs. Like, I might not show it as much, but like I am a complete, like the day before and stuff, I'm just a complete flipping head case. Like, I'm just going back and forth, going out. And like, you're right there, it's almost like it is a Russian roulette where it's like, if you have 12 acts on the one bill, there is, by the law of numbers, there's going to be one of those acts that might not die or whatever, but he's just probably not going to be as strong on the night. And that could be for a variety of reasons. Maybe he just had other things going on at home that day. Maybe it's an alcohol thing. Maybe he got real nervous and just choked a little bit. Like, it could be anything, really. No one is flawless. You know what I mean?
No, I think there's definitely room to sort of improve. But the only way we're going to do that is when we get back to doing gigs as well. You like me as well, haven't been doing much in the way of like Zoom gigs and all that kind of crack. One of the last things I was going to say, because you're like me, so like your stand-up ended when you did your last gig, same as mine, waiting for us to reopen. But in the process of that, you also put out Belfast Blues, because I mean, you produce your own stuff as well in your own videos. So Belfast Blues was the last week, like a mini series you did online. Have you anything coming out the other side of this, or do you have to wait to film it whenever we're able to?
I mean, me and Shane are always toying about with different ideas of web series and things. We tried to do a little bit of a one that was called Sunset Heights, which was like we all filmed it on green screen. We did two of those and people seemed to like them. We might do a third one, who knows? We were thinking before all this, me and Shane were talking about doing either a Belfast Blues season two, or we had an idea. I don't know much I can say about the idea, but I'll give you a sort of brief thing on it. We were going to do an idea that was like a mockumentary about the game of Cribby or Kirby, whatever way you say it. We had a three-part documentary we were currently writing for that. Now, we might come back to that, but at the same time, Shane's obviously got a lot going on because he's rebooking a lot of gigs and also he's about to become a dad for the first time here.
Yeah.
So it's gonna obviously change his life a lot. For me, I'm just at the minute in the process of just thinking, what video can I make, or what's the next bit of content I can create? I've got one at the minute that I'm sort of writing, but I haven't finished, that I want to make. It's about an Irish dancer, and sort of bringing like a new age sort of Irish dancing to the mainstream again, you know. But I haven't got all the kinks worked out in that one yet. But I'm always trying to just think of unique things that have my own spin and take on them, that is also just lighthearted, you know, people can watch it easily and it's not offensive now. And that's why I think videos like the Gaelic video did well, and videos like flipping, you know, some of the quarantine corona stuff we put out did well, and the other like the gymnastics Olympic video that I did earlier as well. Like there's just, for me, it's like, I just want myself to just, for people to watch it and just sort of almost escape for a minute, or just also watch it and be like, that's very smart, that's very clever, and it's also very silly. And it's easy saying those ideas, but coming up with them is the hardest bit. Like the writing and like the video, and I can do it with my eyes closed, and the acting stuff's good fun, but it's just having, and I think because the age we live in an age of the internet where, you know, if a bit of news comes out, someone already has a million jokes about it on Twitter. So trying to put your unique take on it becomes increasingly more difficult.
You mean you have a time frame of there's hundreds of Twitter jokes going while you've written it, trying to produce it, trying to edit it. That time just keeps ticking and this stuff's already out there.
Yeah, in a way, but then at the same time, I think if the idea is strong enough and it's unique enough with your own spin on it, I mean, something can be said. I'm trying to think of what, if there's something, because I think there was something I was doing recently that was really similar to something someone else did, but it was still unique enough and still fresh enough that I still got away from. But it isn't coming to my mind at the minute, but there was something. But I think every circumstance and every case is different when it comes to that. You just have to sort of hedge everything up, you know, the pros and cons, and it was maybe something Foil Arms and Hog did, now it's calling it, but yeah, I can't remember it.
Okay, well then, two things before I let you go. Number one, would you write something that you need a culture to be in? Because I'm shit at accents. I can't do a Belfast accent.
Yeah, for sure. I'll come up with some sort of culture character for you. You can be some sort of no eyebrowed makeup grease guy who loves gardening.
I didn't say I love gardening. I just said I fucking did my garden.
Yeah, does his gardening. Yeah. There's something like that for sure. Listen, I'll always keep you in mind whenever I have something for you, believe me.
Thanks, Butler. I appreciate that.
No problem, dude.
And then before I do let you go, where do we find your stuff? I mean, where do people find you online? This is a discussion we've had about usernames and how to have everything nice and concise. So everywhere you're on the same name, isn't it? Is yours the same handle?
I have the same handle for everything, bar Twitter, because Twitter's dick, but whatever. I bought the domain name, rnbutler.online. So if you go to rnbutler.online, it has a hub that has every social media page. I have Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Facebook. So if you go to rnbutler.online, you find everything. It's easy to do.
Okay, everybody, that's what you do. So it's rnbutler.online, and then whatever your preferred...
Yep.
Preferred medium is, because like I don't have a TikTok because I feel old and I don't know. Is TikTok like Vine repackaged? Is that what it is?
That's exactly what it is. And man, I was sort of like you, where I was like, I'm too old for this. I refuse to join it. Like it's too new for me, or there's too many kids on it. And then I got it and I was like, all right, I got it and thought, right, I'll put like 10 videos I've already made up here and just see what happens. One of the videos ended up getting like 60,000 views and I got like 2,000 followers from it or something. And I was like, oh fuck, now I'm going to have to become a TikTok guy. So I have to make content for this because I now have all these new followers from a new avenue. So I mean, it's just another app. Like,
well, that's okay. No, because I just have, I have Twitter, which I want to delete because it's just poison. I mean, I like Instagram because I've got travel photos and gig photos and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out, my mate is actually going to teach me how to keep my basically business Facebook pages, but also just get rid of my own because I don't need my fucking, my Facebook pages. So it's just, keep the comedy page, and then I've got one for the comedy club and anything I'm a moderator on as well. But I admire your idea. It's great, which is like you're kind of going old school by having an actual website, and then it just shows people where to go.
Yeah, and I think it just comes down to keeping things simple. The domain is simple. It's my name .online, and like when people ask where do I follow you, you can pick whatever one you follow me on instead of having to list Instagram blah blah blah. It's just like ironbutler.online. It's simple as that. Like I think Instagram is my favorite as well, because you can do photos and you can also do long form videos, so I think it's the best of both worlds.
Yeah, that's that Instagram TV, isn't it? Kind of getting a little bit of that YouTube pie. Like that's a good idea.
Yeah, and you got the Instagram stories, and I think at the minute it's probably the most versatile and best one for promotion at the minute. I do.
Okay, now because everyone's got such short attention spans, ironbutler.online, that's everything.
Lovely.
Boom, beautiful. Aaron, thank you very much for coming on and chatting with me, and cheers for making me relive my painful past about that time we did a Scream musical. Appreciate that.
The same goes to you. Thanks for having me on, Darren. All the best to you, bud.
No problem, dude. We will hopefully get a gig on the go shortly, and then more likely than getting a fucking packed out gig, you'll see me in one of Aaron's productions as that no eyebrow cult she keeps talking about writing for me. So we shall see. Guys, as always, like, share and subscribe. I hope you've been enjoying the podcast and we've been keeping you somewhat sane, because I'm doing two episodes a week now instead of one. So hopefully you're keeping sane while you're out for your nice walks with my dulcet tones in your ears, and the lovely Aaron Butler joining me this evening. So thank you very much, guys. This has been Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends. Say bye, Aaron.
Bye, guys.